and welcome to the MotoGP podcast. This week's episode sees us delve into the archives for the first time, and we'll be starting off talking about that most exciting of topics, rivalries.
Yeah, we will indeed. We did a full deep dive over the last week, checking out some of the biggest rivalries the sport has ever seen. Everybody from Phil Reed versus Giacomo Agostini all the way up to present day. The 2019 Repsol Honda team lineup, Marc Marquez, Jorge Lorenzo. And we've got some insights from a whole host of legends of the sport coming up. So, Fran, where shall we start?
Well, first we're going to hear from the aforementioned Agostini and Reed. Way back in an era where there was a lot less safety, everything was a pretty different game back then. And their rivalry certainly seemed pretty fierce from the outside, and a lot of those battles were in the press.
Well, it was all good to create an atmosphere about Giacomo and myself were fighting each other. So obviously Giacomo had his fans and I had my fans, and it made the racing much more exciting.
Yeah, of course it was difficult because two big riders, everybody want to win. He want to win, I want to win. So the trophy is only one. And I won the trophy and he won the trophy. So it's what I say, it's very difficult to be a very, very good friend, because sometimes a field must not push out me, but just go inside very strongly. And sometimes I go inside very strongly. So it's always very difficult, but it's important they respect each other.
Yeah, absolutely. But
because, you know, it's, at that time we risk really the life, because the circuit was not like today, no safety, we don't have a good helmet, we don't have a good leathers, we don't have the airbag.
And we race on five road circuits, yeah. Without the safety of the current Grand Prix circuits. Yeah, we were teammates riding for MV Agusta, but we'd like to psych each other out.
So the question is, do Phil Reed and Giacomo Agostini think they had one of the biggest rivalries in history?
Well, maybe the press maybe thought it was, but they've been later.
No, what we say before, of course, if we're leading the race, I won't win, he won't win. So we must, you know, we must do 100%.
We must fight.
And
yeah.
We must say, okay, Phil, pass me, or Phil say, okay, Iago, can you pass me? So you must. And the end of the race, if I win, I'm happy, and he's not happy. And I win always. This is why he's not happy.
And then when I win, he's crying.
When he win, I cry.
So as you can hear, definitely a fierce rivalry, but maybe a little bit different behind the scenes, those two seem to be saying. Underpinned by that sort of lack of safety, I think that really... Obviously, the sport is a dangerous sport, and it always will be to some extent. But back then, it was a very, very different situation. You know, it was also in a lot of other motorsports, much less safety. And I think that fostered a sort of band of brothers mentality and just sort of natural respect between the riders and camaraderie.
Yeah, agreed. Although racing's still racing, they did bring up that other topic there, psyching each other out. One of their contemporaries, the late, great Mike Hailwood, of course, he was very partial to some of those tactics, particularly just before the race start on the grid. Up next, we actually have his son, Dave Hailwood, who's going to be talking to us a little bit about some of his dad's antics.
Because he liked to play a lot of psychological games with a lot of the riders. I know that still happens today. He just seemed to have a knack of doing it. He'd be on the front of the grid, for example, and grid full of bikes behind him, and he'd just look across and go, and the rider would be left going, looking at his bike, going, what, am I leaking oil? Is the tire flat? You know, and just, it would just offset the mind. And because of that, he knew he was going to be able to get away quicker than him, because he's too busy looking at his bike. And he just used to play these little psychological games with the guys, and just gave him that edge. I remember him saying, he actually said to Phil once, good old Phil, what was it he said? Keep to the left, Phil, because on lap two, I'll be coming through on the right. And sure enough, on the second lap, whoop, came through on the right-hand side of him. So, yeah. But those two had some great battles.
Dave's also met all of those guys who are racing his dad, and he gives us a bit more insight into the difference between on track and off in this next little snippet. So what did those guys all think of his dad, Mike?
It depends who you speak to. Everyone loved dad. I don't think he had any enemies, apart from maybe the person that he beat on that day. But as I said before, they were all such good friends. The next day it was a bit of tongue-in-cheek humour. Oh, well, you beat me yesterday, or I'm going to have you next week. You know, so I think they sort of played around a lot like that. But I love speaking to the guys that used to ride with Dad, because it's as close as I can get to him. So I love to hear all the stories, and I love to hear the racing. But I've seen most of the photos and I've read all the books, so I know all the history and I know who came where and what race. What I want to know from them is, what did you do after the race? Where did you go and party? What did you get up to? And some of the stories that they told me, I'm sorry, I just can't repeat. But yeah, they all show, you know, so much love and respect for him. It's almost like they were, you know, all of them were all like brothers. It was almost sort of like all like family, because they were so close and they were so tight as friends. It was like an extended family. So yeah, I mean, they, you know, Giacomo Agostini, for example, at home, he's Uncle Giacomo. So my little boy, Mike, who is also Mike, when I introduced him to Giacomo, I think he was 3. And I said to Giacomo, I was going to name him after you, just to wind up my mum. And he thought I was, but I could never get away with that. I would never live it down. So yes, because he had to be Mike.
So cracking insights from those guys back in that era. I think now we should probably fast forward a bit more to the time when the likes of Spencer and Roberts ruled the world. Two guys who really started to get onto our sort of next main topic, which is making your rivals forcing you to raise your game. Spencer came in, fast Freddy Spencer, and he pulled a audacious move on Kenny Roberts Sr. back at the 1983 Swedish Grand Prix. To this day, this move still sparks debate, mainly because it wasn't ever caught on camera. Basically, what resulted, Spencer won the race and Roberts was left absolutely spitting feathers. So I think it's probably fair now if Freddie gives his side of the story.
Certainly he was not happy, understand. We didn't touch, but it's like I told him afterwards. I mean, he would have done the same thing. And it's like when he passed me at Les Sources during the Belgium Grand Prix, and we ran a little bit wide. The championship is on the line, and you got to understand, I not only knew how difficult it was going to be at Imola, I'm aware of that at that moment, you know, of all the possibilities, what I'm going to be facing, this opportunity, watching his hand, setting up the pass on the entrance, all these things that kind of made that happen, and it worked out, and it worked out in my favor. But I understand, you know, one of the things that made it difficult, and I got pummeled in the press about it. And I understand, I'm the young guy, and he's the veteran, and it, you know, this was his last championship, and everything was on the line. But at the time, there was no cameras down at that angle, you know, that part of the track, and you know, what everybody, all they saw was is me and on the inside, and Kenny kind of off the track, and I won the race, but. You know, we, for years and years and years, we never really talked about it. It's like I told him a few years ago, is, you know, that championship, it took, if, you know, you have an ability, you give an ability, which I believe people are, and then the work ethic and everything it took to win that championship, and it raised my performance to a level because of competing with him.
So yeah, I think it's always interesting to hear stuff like that and how those rivals can force you to raise your game and sort of bring the best out in yourself. That's what they always say about the classics usually, isn't it? That having that person that it takes so much to beat really pushes you on. So now I think it might be time to hit up one of our most famous rivalries in MotoGP history, which would be Kevin Schwantz and Wayne Rainey. Pretty bitter at the time, but it's an all-time classic. And now I think it's even better because they're actually able to laugh about it and chat about it. So let's hear from those guys, and it's Wayne Rainey who speaks first.
I think, you know, the rivalries, Kevin and mine was real. There was, you know, it wasn't made up. I mean, it was in the beginning of our rivalry together, you know, it was not very friendly. But as we got older
in the beginning, hatred.
Exactly.
I'll say it. I think he will too.
It was difficult. But as we, you know, as we got into the World Championship and, you know, you're working very hard in this sport, there's only one winner. So, you know, fortunately in our era, there was other guys that we also had to focus on. And, you know, certainly at the end of my racing career, when Kevin and I went head to head there in 93, I had a much more respect for him for what he was doing. I really thought he'd, from where we were to where we were at now, it was, you know, it was a serious professional relationship as far as on the track, the way that we, you know, we raced each other. It was still, you know, dead serious that, you know, one of the first guys I wanted to beat was him, but, you know, he'd raised his game up and really made me work at a different way that I had not done before with him.
Obviously, you can hear, given that interview was them two speaking together, they can't stand being in the same room with each other and making such jokes about their career in the past. You could sit and listen to those guys all day. Might have to use them a little bit more in the features as we go throughout the season. But it was from a kind of homegrown hatred, which kind of blossomed, for want of a better word, I think. I'm not sure if hatred really blossoms, does it?
I think hatred blossoms.
Have we got
fine.
thesaurus.com up or anything? Well, I'd say it blossomed to, as you mentioned before, one of the greatest rivalries of a generation. But here is the story up next of Schwantz and Rainey, their first ever on-track encounter all the way back in the USA. And we're going to be hearing again from Wayne Rainey first.
Well, I think our rivalry, which is different than maybe the current rivalries, is ours started in the U.S. So, you know, we started in the U.S. racing superbikes. I was kind of the established guy. And then I was trying to keep my position in the U.S. and Kevin was a new guy coming up. And I remember when I first saw him on the track, I wasn't even racing him at the time. I was in a different class, and he was riding in the superbike class. And I had watched him miss a chicane, and he made the save, and I went, wow, who's that guy? So that got my attention, and so I knew that this guy could be a threat if I ever went up against him. And as it turned out, I believe it was 1986, we had both went head-to-head for the first time. He was with Yoshimura Suzuki, and I was with American Honda. And you know, we met on the track, and we didn't really know each other too much. And you know, I was just kind of riding around out there, and this guy stuffs it up the inside of me. And I thought, oh, okay, this is how we're going to play it. And so it basically was the best thing that happened to me, you know, because I had somebody here that was challenging me. And we raced each other very, very hard. And he was the guy that I started thinking about during the week. And you know, when he would get in front of me, he was riding a certain way that was kind of loose and kind of crazy looking. And so it gave me a new perspective to what I had been racing against on the asphalt in road racing. So it was very good. I certainly enjoyed it. It was, you know, as far as Kevin went, there was like my race with Kevin, and then there was my race with everybody else. So I always had two races that I was involved with at each race.
I was only ever in one, and that was against him. It didn't matter. Anybody else could beat me, that was okay, but to lose to Wayne Rainey was a knife in my heart, and I couldn't get over it until the next weekend or the next race when there was another practice session that at least I got to get in front in the practice session. You know, it was just everything about the race weekend revolved around whether I was in front of him or behind him. And I'm sure you could ask the team, anybody that worked in it, that if we were in front of him, I was okay to be around. If I was behind him, I was in there probably using some words that you wouldn't want me to repeat. And you know, just trying to, I knew Wayne when I first started racing. I'd watched him, I knew what his accomplishments were, and he was the guy that I knew I needed to beat.
So that's a few good examples of historical and legendary rivalries in the sport. But next up, we're going to move a little bit more recent, at least towards the latter end of his career, which has not yet finished, even 20 Premier Class seasons in. Of course, I'm talking about the great Valentino Rossi.
Yeah, the man who has had, well, so many rivalries throughout his career. When we were deciding the topic for this first feature podcast, we realised could have probably actually made an entire podcast episode about Rossi himself. You got Max Biaggi, Seti Gibernau, Jorge Lorenzo, Casey Stoner, and more recently as well, Marquez as two. The Doctor is about to start his 20th season in the Premier class, and the guy's just still at the top of his game. He's been master of change and adaptation, which has pretty much been his key ace up his sleeve throughout his whole career. The guy is the perfect example of forcing your rivals to up their game to have basically any possibility of beating them. He's also evolved with them as he's gone on. There have been some wonderful images of how his riding style has developed over the years aboard that Yamaha M1, and the guy has just changed the game as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of rivalries and classic moments when you're talking about Valentino Rossi and his rivals, like we said. But what about the man himself? Which is his favourite? I'm sure we all have our own favourites. Quite often it can be, you know, maybe that first one that we saw when we got into the sport, because Valentino brought so many new fans to MotoGP. But when the Doctor himself was asked in 2017, he said that famous and incredible Catalunya 2009 contest against Lorenzo and the last corner overtake there. Or at least that's what he says initially. But next time, maybe be a little bit careful of who might be in the room when you're giving your answer.
Yep. Not that you could actually watch that press conference, given that this is a podcast, but if you ever get a chance to, watching Rossi's face drop as he realises is pretty funny.
Love that moment so much.
Yeah. one of my favourite social media questions moments, especially with Marcus just tapping him on the shoulder like, Valentino, over there. Oh, Sete.
That awkward moment when you haven't remembered that Sete Gibernau is now back in the paddock and with Danny Pedrosa, I think it was at the time.
Full-time this year for five rounds as well this year.
Yeah, with Moto E. Well. So he's back on a bike as well. But it was an absolutely great moment that was.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've heard Rossi mention it, but now we're actually going to hear from one of his other biggest rivals, the 2007-2011 world champion, Casey Stoner. He's going to tell us about that Laguna 2008 moment. What was it like being on the receiving end of such a move? As you're about to hear, for Stoner, it was more than just a memory or a defeat. Remember, he was very, very annoyed about it at the time. Understandably slow. He was not understandably slow. That's something no one has ever said about Casey Stoner before in his career.
That was an unfortunate slip, that was.
Yeah, we're going to have to keep this in, aren't we?
Yeah, well, I think so.
What I was about to say, though, Fran, actually, was that that moment was a turning point for Casey Stoner in his career.
I think that moment, quite honestly, was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me. You know, if I didn't go through that moment and understand a little bit more of that situation, then it wouldn't have made me as strong as what I ended up in my career. I think that moment transformed me, I suppose you could say, and basically made me understand a little bit more of this world, this paddock, what I needed to do to succeed in it and how to overcome those sort of things. So, you know, from that moment on, I never let that moment happen again. And, you know, that was a crucial moment in my career for me. And for me, that's where I made a step up.
For me, I think that's one of the most interesting quotes from a rider. I think Stoner, he's well known for his dislike of the media and, you know, not the media personnel necessarily, but that whole part of the sport. He's just interested in getting on a bike, riding the bike, and competing, really.
I can't say he's going to be too much of a fan of this certain media personnel describing him as slow, but...
It's okay. Everyone makes mistakes. It's okay. The quotes you do get can often be some of the best, I think, from Casey. Super erudite.
Absolutely.
And great insight from him. So for him, it was a pivotal moment. But for Valentino Rossi, it was that move against Lorenzo at Catalunya 2009 that was more so, according to the Doctor. I think that was the moment, though, that the momentum really changed that year. Obviously, two guys in that factory Yamaha team, pretty tense. Lorenzo in his second season, that whole race, they'd just been absolutely tagged together. Really, really incredible race, that is. And that move seemed to just be the starting point of Rossi just stamping a little bit of authority on the season. But that almighty battle within Yamaha was raging behind the scenes as well. And then we got a wall down the middle of the garage, and that was the most visible sign on it, But yeah, pretty crazy times back then when those two shared that team the first time around.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll remember then, by the end of 2010, Rossi, he was off to Ducati. Lorenzo was the reigning MotoGP champion. But 2 years later, Rossi announced that he was returning to his beloved Yamaha M1. The question on everyone's lips at that time was, would history repeat itself? Is that wall going straight back up again? Are they going to be the best of friends if they put their past behind them? Well, here is Lorenzo speaking at the Indianapolis press conference back in 2012, just after Rossi had announced his return to the Yamaha in the summer break that year.
Well, I don't have any problem with anybody. I like to have a good relationship with everybody in the paddock. And I have a lot of respect to Valentino, so maybe if he asks me for some favor, I will give him.
But if he start winning, will you put the wall?
I always say the wall is a stupid thing. It doesn't make sense about anything. So no wall is okay for me, and I think for Vale this time. To be honest, I really think if I been negotiating the contract, if I say no to some rider, I will have it. But anyway, I never care about my teammate. I will not care in the future. And for me, it's a pleasure to be again with Valentino, 2 more years with the same bike. So for me, everything is positive. Yeah, maybe one of my challenges will be again to Valentino, but it's not the main one. The main one is to be again world champion this year and the next 2 years.
So obviously back then it seemed like it was going to be another inter-team Yamaha battle to try and take that crown. But there was something, obviously Stoner was retiring at the end of that season, that was known by then. But there was something that they didn't quite count on, and that was the arrival of a Moto2 reigning champion by the name of Marc Márquez into that Repsol Honda team. So, and it didn't turn out to be a Yamaha battle at all. It was Lorenzo versus rookie Márquez. And I think if Rossi before had been the man always changing the game, I think there's a good argument to be made now for Márquez also having immediately set about starting to do that in MotoGP.
Oh, absolutely. From that revolutionary riding style, I think we're fully allowed to say the aggression on track, sometimes, frankly, pure cheek. That contact with Lorenzo at the corner, just named after him at Jerez in the Spanish Grand Prix. The move on Rossi at the corkscrew, inverse deja vu, I branded it at the time, was told never to say that again. But here we are, 6 years later, some things never change. Their rivalry, it's between Rossi and Márquez, it's been bitter, and it peaked in some, afterwards, some very, very controversial moments. We don't need to talk about them again. But it ultimately, in terms of the results and the statistics, it remains only Márquez and Lorenzo who have taken the crown from 2012 to now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Rossi has come runner-up in that time, and Andrea Dovizioso as well, but the only two names on that trophy since Stoner's in 2011 have been Jorge Lorenzo or Marc Márquez. So that means Repsol Honda now have those two guys, 8 of the last 9 championships they've won, more wins than anyone else. But is that actually a blessing and a superstar lineup to mean that they're going to really clean up? Or is it actually a bit of a recipe for rivalry disaster at HRC, such as we saw at Yamaha before? So as we heard Lorenzo speaking back in 2012, he sees it sort of as a pure challenge. But now we're going to hear a bit from the man who's come closest to taking that crown from Márquez in the last couple of years, certainly, which is obviously Andrea Dovizioso. This is him on sharing the garage with Lorenzo at Ducati. And he's speaking last season just before that title decider at Motegi.
When you have two riders fighting for the championship, it's positive, like what happened from Brno has now, because we push each other, and this is positive for the developing of the bike and the result of the riders. But this created also tension, and this is the best way to lose a point.
So, as you just heard, it's not always a case of pushing each other on, raising the level each time, although it's an interesting question about how he took that such a big step, Dovizioso did, when Lorenzo actually arrived in Ducati. But now that Lorenzo has moved to Honda, is Márquez going to have to take a similar step? I mean, he's already at the top, you can't really take that many more steps, you know what I mean? I think at the moment it would be more than appropriate to hear from that man himself. How does Marc Márquez feel about an all-new team dynamic in HRC?
Yeah, of course, the move from Lorenzo to from Ducati to Honda, I think is important. If I on the side, it's important because then you have a rider, a very strong rider, a champion, like he say, that he can win with your bike, and he will not win with another bike. So, and if I put in my side, I prefer to have one of the best riders in the category with the same bike, same tools. Why? Because then it's no excuse if he won, because he will be very, very fast. If he beat me, he will beat with the same bike. So no excuse, no? It's like this, and he was faster. So this is what, of course, take a risk, because then the people say, you saw, but it's like this. The life is like this, and I prefer to, I like this this move, because then you avoid that another manufacturer like Ducati, that is very strong, have a very strong rider.
Yeah, I think Márquez, it's pretty impressive for me at least how he's absolutely refused to veto that move and is welcoming that challenge. It seems that with the arrival of Alberto Puig into that team as well at the helm, communication seems better on the whole between the team and Japan. Everything's really going pretty well for those guys at the moment. So it will be really interesting to see what will happen when Lorenzo arrives. And they do have, yeah, just incredible stats between them, obviously. Awesome amount of talent as well, but yeah, to see how their dynamic changes, and we're going to see that pretty soon when the 2019 season begins, and hopefully they'll both be back up to full strength. But now we're going to hear something a little bit more lighthearted, and remember that even when it seems like the bitterest rivalry, sometimes there can be a bit of a happy ending. So we're going to finish up with Lorenzo talking about his great rivalry with compatriot Danny Pedrosa, which went from very, very bitter, not even shaking hands even when the King of Spain tried to make them do that, to possibly one of the best relationships in the paddock by the time Pedrosa retired at the end of last season. So here's a little snippet from the press conference at Catalunya in 2012.
As you say, in 2003 we were like enemies, 2005 we were more enemies, 2008 even more enemies. Now we can have a hug, and maybe in 2 or 3 years we get married.
So that is it for this episode, our first topic and feature episode done and dusted. They're not always going to be mashups and talking about topics like this. We will have some episodes like our next feature episode, which will be just a straight up interview. Who do we have up first for our next feature?
It is indeed someone we've heard from today already, and that is the great two-time world champion Casey Stoner. So yeah, the next voice you'll hear on a feature episode of the podcast will be largely male and Australian. Some pretty interesting stuff from Stoner, and I think it should be a really good listen.
Yeah, candid as ever, and a long one at that as well, which I'm sure you all appreciate. But our next episode in general will come to you next Thursday, and that'll be our review of the final pre-season test for the Premier Class, MotoGP at Qatar. We'll have insights again from Simon Crafar, and of course hearing from all the top riders as well. Maybe me and Fran will have a little bit of natter of our own thoughts about what went on with Qatar as well. But even before that, I've done this in a bit of a weird reverse order, I think, but hey ho, we'll roll with it. Before that, this weekend, so you're hearing this from Thursday onwards, this weekend it's the first round of the 2019 World Superbike Championship.
It is at Phillip Island, which for me is the world's greatest racetrack. Not that I'm biased.
That's but, thrusting.
absolutely gorgeous track, obviously. And it is the venue for the season opener. So they've just had testing. That's just concluded. And it's Alvaro Bautista, our former...
our migratory rider. He's flown the nest.
I thought you were, I was wondering where the next part of the pun or attempted joke was going to come from. Yeah, indeed, he has. So yeah, the new Aruba.it racing guy has really lit the timesheets up, certainly during this test in Australia. So that'll be pretty interesting, I think. And the track always creates incredible racing. Last year's season opener from Superbike was an absolute stunner. So make sure you tune in for that and head to worldsbk.com for any details about what's been happening in testing and how you can watch that.
And of course, to get your MotoGP fix for before, during and after the Qatar test, head to MotoGP.com. At the end of each day, there'll be the After the Flag show once again, and they'll be bringing you all the insights that you'll need, or you can listen to our lovely voices a few days later on the Thursday for the Post Qatar podcast, as we mentioned earlier. So remember to use the hashtag MotoGP podcast with any questions, comments, requests for us.
But with the caveat of please be kind, because this is episode 2, you know. But if you think there is anything we need to work on, let us know. But be kind about it. And let us know if you have any questions at all. We will try and track down the right person to get you that answer from the paddock, from the start of the season. Let us know what you want to know and we'll go and find out.
Yeah, well, we said last week, I think, to follow or subscribe to the podcast. But this week, we want you, if you've enjoyed it, to go and tell one other person you know that's a MotoGP fan or someone that should listen to this podcast. Get them to give it a listen, sign up, follow, subscribe, whatever you want to call it. That would be very much appreciated. And we'll see you next Thursday.
We will. Goodbye.